NPR at 88.5 WMUV. This week's topic, presidential signing statements. We have two experts on the topic, Professor Chris Kelly, visiting assistant professor of political science at Miami University, attorney and member of the American Bar Association Task Force on Presidential Signing Statements, Bruce Fine, who also testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee on this issue. He's a constitutional lawyer and international consultant with the Litchfield Group in Washington, D.C., a columnist also for the Washington Times. And let's go to the phone at 888-877-3885. Bob from Cheviot, tell us your question or your comment.
Well, you know, I just wanted to express my cynicism about what can be done about this, and even despair at times. There's just no oversight. There's short of changing the Congress into a more combative type thing, or someone with some checks and balances. I don't see any chance at all. I mean, you couldn't even get Arlen Specter to put the Gonzalez under oath to answer questions. I mean, and even if we could change Congress, would that make a difference? I mean, the Democrats have been bootlicking for 6 years now, or however long the Republicans have been in control. I don't see it changing, and I just like an opinion.
Well,
since we can't see Bruce, let's let him get involved here. Go ahead.
I think the voters have a chance to give some vertebrae to Congress, which has turned spineless with the Republican in the White House, and that is during campaigns you need to ask candidates, how are you going to vote on presidential powers? Will you use the power of the purse to tell the president that he has no money to run programs unless he discloses information to Congress, that he has no money to execute the laws when he issues signing statements? These have to be a staple of the debate during campaigns. If it's not, remember, this is our government. That's what the Declaration of Independence, government by the consent of the governed. And that's the great thing about this country. We can demand answers and hold officials accountable, and the political process is one of those methods. I would hope that in 2008, programs like this will be asking candidates for the presidency, well, what is your view of signing statements? What is your view of flouting the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act? What is your view of conducting military tactics on the streets of Ohio under the theory that all the world is a battlefield after 9/11? If these things become part of the staple of discussion in American politics, things will change. If the American people don't care, I can guarantee you Congress is not. And when I have testified on repeated occasions before both the Senate and the House, I get questions from members saying, well, I'm not getting thousands of letters in, so why should I care about this, Mr. Fine? Well, they need to get thousands of letters in, and then they will care.
Chris Kelly?
I think that's exactly right. The press, you would think, for example, that the press could do a great service to pushing Congress into challenging the president simply by focusing on this issue and making it known every time that the administration issues these sorts of challenges. But it doesn't. I mean, it was sort of the topic du jour for a while, and it's kind of faded. And despite the fact the attention that it got when President Bush signed the pension bill yesterday, in his signing statement, he issued three more constitutional challenges to a bill that he had just signed. So the press isn't going to be sufficient in this cause. It will take an aggravation by the American public that forces wind behind the sails of the Congress.
Okay, Bob, thank you so much for raising that question. 888-877-3885. Send an email to forum@wmub.org. Bruce Fine, I understand that you played a role in the Reagan administration, and that perhaps your opinion of some of these issues has shifted in the last couple of decades. Tell us more about that.
I wouldn't say that. There are two different kinds of signing statements. In the Reagan administration, then and now, I support the idea of a signing statement not of the type that nullifies a law, that understands, however, that the president has a role in fashioning legislation that's presented to him. As anyone knows, the president and his subordinates oftentimes are negotiating with members of the House and Senate over language of a bill that would be acceptable but not provoke a veto. And the view of a signing statement that I think is wholly legitimate is one where the president says, all right, I've got this bill. There are some provisions here that are ambiguous. And I have had a role in drafting this legislation every bit as much as Congress has. My view of the legislation is that this term means X. He doesn't say I'm not going to enforce the law. It says in enacting the legislation, my view was considered as well as the congressional view, and this was the compromise language. That seems to me totally legitimate. The president's view is not binding upon the courts, but it has some proper influence, just like a single member of Congress standing on the floor and saying, I think when we pass this bill, this term means X, or a committee report. Voices a view of how a particular term ought to be interpreted is given some weight, even though the president cannot veto a committee report, he cannot veto a member's statement on the floor of Congress. That is, however, a far different concept, because that situation is one, because I am enforcing the law, but this ambiguity in my term is, in view, is, it should be interpreted in this way, given my view of how the legislative process unfolded, compared with a committee report.
How did President Reagan use the signing statements? Were there some specifics that we would be familiar with, if you could point them out to us?
Well, they're nothing like the Detainee Treatment Act that Chris pointed out on the anti-torture provision, or there's a regular Intelligence Authorization Act that instructs President Bush not to use our military forces in Colombo to attack Colombia to attack narco-terrorists, which he repeatedly says I'll just view as hortatory and will not pay any attention to. So there were, however, provisions relating to certain contracting rules that ended up in a lot of litigation where the Reagan administration lost. This was one that was alleged to infringe on the president's authority to faithfully execute certain contracting decisions and free from the oversight of the General Accounting Office. So I'm not saying that the Reagan administration, whether or not, because I wasn't the one certainly who was responsible for the vast majority of his signing statements, may not have overstepped the bounds, but I've never, my view of signing statements, the only one are legitimate is those that address the president's role in fashioning legislation, not any presidential authority simply to decide on his own. He simply won't enforce the law, the one that he signed himself. And this is one of the basic contradictions, it seems to me, with regard to the proponents of the signing statements. They say, well, he has an obligation to defend the Constitution, so how can he enforce a law that he believes is unconstitutional? But then you have to ask, go a step forward. How can he sign a law that he thinks is unconstitutional and say he's faithfully defending the Constitution? The Founding Fathers wanted him to veto those bills he thought were unconstitutional. In the history of the United States, 217 years, there have been about 28 instances when the president vetoed a bill on constitutional grounds. And in only one of those cases did that veto get overridden and create a constitutional battle. This was in 1867. So if you do it the right way, you get one problem in 217 years. That's a pretty good record for the Founding Fathers.
We're talking about presidential signing statements on this week's WMUB Forum. A few minutes remaining for you to express your opinion or pose a question for our guests. 888-877-3885 or 529-5200 in area code 513. Our email address, forum@WMUB.org. Please feel free to jump on board with your question or your comment. Is there any activity, Chris Kelly, in the Congress or in the courts that is challenging the use of presidential signing statements within this constitutionally prescribed balance of power?
Well, besides the couple pieces of legislation that have been introduced in the House and the Senate, you basically that's really just about it. The courts have sort of hit or miss with respect to taking these signing statements into account when they're deciding their decisions. There was a lot of anxiety, for example, during the Reagan administration that the fear was that the administration was trying to influence the decision of judges by putting signing statements into the legislative history of all bills that he signs into law. Clearly that I don't think has been much of a problem. But with respect to the bills that are going through Congress, I mean, these bills face an uphill battle. I mean, they face the uphill battle just in the formal process of getting passed by Congress and actually either signed by President Bush or having his veto overridden, perhaps his second veto. But in addition to those problems, I think the legislation also has the problems of Republicans inside the Congress undermining the legislation itself. With respect, for example, to Senator Specter and his ability to hold hearings on this, he has been undermined by Republican members of the Senate Judiciary Committee to hold these kind of hearings as a way to protect the president. So I think going into the 2006 midterms, I don't know that this is likely something that is going to weigh heavy on the Congress with respect to it passing.
Bruce Fine, what are we going to see in terms of activity in the coming months or the next couple of years related to signing statements?
Well, with the next couple of months, I don't think we're going to see any activity at all. It's, I helped draft the bill that Senator Specter introduced. It hasn't gotten a groundswell of co-sponsorships on the Republican side. I know I've worked with Senator Russ Feingold's office in Wisconsin, so there may be, you know, a growing eagerness of the Democrats to be co-sponsors, but they're not. I do think, however, that in all cases like this, there needs to be a public educational process of the type of this program, mm-hmm. so that it filters down to the American people, you know, how dangerous this particular proposition is. And it's not impossible that the public sentiment can force congressional action. And I think about President Franklin D. Roosevelt's court packing plan after he won a landslide victory in 1936. The public just sensed there was something wrong, institutionally wrong, about trying to pack and manipulate the Supreme Court to help the president, even if he was overwhelmingly popular. And it's that kind of public anxiety and worry that I think that could spur Congress, not this year, but perhaps in the next Congress, to take action against the signing statements through the power of the purse or otherwise.
We're just about out of time. Each of you, 30 seconds, your recommendation for how our listeners could learn more about this issue or get involved.
I think the internet provides a perfect tool to stay on top of this. In addition to the internet, I think that there continues at least to be editorials written about the signing statement, op-ed pieces about the signing statement. So I think that there is ample opportunity for the American public to make itself aware and knowledgeable about the topic.
Bruce?
Well, I would suggest, as a primer anyway, just reading through the transcript and the written statements that were submitted during Senator Specter's hearing on signing statements held earlier this year. And it's information that's written in prose that's accessible, not too filled with the patois of lawyers.
All right. Well, Chris Kelly and Bruce Fine, thank you both so much for being part of this conversation on presidential signing statements. We do have some links on our website, WMUV.org. If you click on the WMUV Forum banner, you'll find a link to Chris Kelly's page on the Miami University website. You'll find a link to the American Bar Association Task Force on Signing Statements that involved Bruce Fine, and also a link to his his law firm, the Litchfield Group. But thank you both for being part of the program today.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
We encourage our listeners to visit our website, WMUV.org, for more information about this topic, plus links for podcasting and web streaming on our website. Again, that's WMUV.org. Views and opinions expressed in this program are those of our listeners and our guests, and not necessarily of WMUV or our licensee, Miami University. Today's producers were Grant Gerlach and John Hoffman. Grant has been at the controls as well. I'm John Hingsbergen, encouraging you to tune in for an encore presentation of Forum next week, hosted by Gary Scott. And, of course, tune in every Friday morning between 9 and 10 o'clock. The show repeats in the evening at 7 o'clock on NPR at 88.5 WMUV.